Well, good morning and welcome to the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 26th day of March 2020, and your ears are not deceiving you. My name is Peter Wickham, here in on a Thursday. So we have double the pleasure, double the fun this week with me in twice. For some of you who may have been complaining about hearing too much of me recently, well, that's life. I guess some people are happy, some people are sad. So I'm in this morning. We are here with you until 2 p.m. We have a full show. Remember, call number is 434-1790-266-IEVOB is the WhatsApp you can use. My name, of course, is Peter Wickham, and the email address is peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. So we'd love to hear from you using any of those medium. I'm in this morning with Mr. John Stout. As I said, it's an unusual thing for me to be here on a Thursday, so I'm hoping that I can keep up the usual Thursday standards for the time being. Let's see how the conversation goes. It's difficult to think about anything other than the COVID issue these days, and certainly for me, like other places, I have been somewhat perplexed and concerned at the situation and what's happening, not only globally but nationally. I see the headline for the Nation newspaper today speaks of an 11 plus shift, where the shift in the 11 plus goes down to June now instead, and the principals are happy with the new date for the examination. It certainly was my hope that the COVID crisis would have prompted one thing, and one thing alone that was good, which would have been that we would take the opportunity, since we have to defer the 11 plus, to scrap it all together, and let's get a jump start on the plans for next year. Unlike the principals, I'm not happy with the new date. The reality of the situation is that June is just here, and the anxiety associated with preparations for the exam is really the basis of my concern. In a crisis like this, my sense is that the last thing we need to think of is that people need to still think of preparing themselves for an exam in June, and the lessons that may be needed, and the lessons that may be needed during this break, and the fact that children, while they're on break now, instead of staying at home, need to focus on going out and doing examinations. So that's my concern. I personally do not think that under the circumstances, the exam is urgent. And I don't think it's anything that we need to do at all, quite frankly. And I'm not quite sure the logic in pushing it to June. The reality of the situation is that in June, we may very well still be in this crisis. We do not know. And the more important thing, as I said, is that if you're saying you're moving it from May to June, you're just pushing the anxiety back a little further. And you're still saying to children, you know, instead of staying indoors and instead of avoiding interaction with others, and instead of practicing social distancing, you ought to start lessons and make sure that your mind is still focused during this time. I certainly have a problem with it. I'm hoping that the Ministry of Education will very shortly begin to consider the wisdom of its ways in this regard. I want to read a note that I received from a lady, because there are two sides to this thing. One of them is the health issues. The other side is the economic impact, and from the very beginning, I've been stressing the economic impact. She's saying, she is asking, and this person should remain nameless, to reach the attention to bring to the authorities an issue which is of concern. On the night of the first announcement, I, like many other mornings for the last 4 years, went to work early to earn a living. The individual works at the airport. She wanted to raise concerns about the immediate future of persons working in a similar industry at the airport. Of course, there have been cancellations left, right, and center, and most, if not all, of the persons have been laid off. They have car rent, car payments to make, they have rent to pay, they have children to send to school, they have loans to repay, and none of those persons of which she speaks can realistically afford mortgages on the basis of the salaries that they have. So as a result, they are mostly renters. She said she hopes that the Prime Minister's message reached everyone with regards to the call for brotherhood, but sadly, she does not think that that is happening. Many landlords are not honoring the Prime Minister's request and giving the relief that is being offered Ironically, although, they are being given relief by the banks from mortgage companies. Many of persons like her who are in essentially in a at-risk job are working for sometimes $15 an hour, not being told how they will be paid or if they will be paid when they're laid off. And what is most hurtful is that the information regarding livelihoods via the news outlets is sparse, if not at all. So to compound the issue, she has a landlord that has started to consider issues of eviction and is not given an ease. She has approached the landlord and told the landlord she's willing to make half of the payment as good faith, and that she was hoping that he could follow the Prime Minister's wish. The gentleman said that he understands the Prime Minister's wish, but he has to pay his mortgage and he has no interest in deferring. He wants to pay and keep it up to date. So she was asking me if I could read the message, as I have just done, and to give some level of exposure to the situation for persons who are in a situation like her, or persons who are in a worse situation than her, because if she works at the airport for $15 an hour, she's still being paid better than somebody who may be working at one of the gas stations for minimum wage. So this is the sad reality that we are facing as this situation continues. I had the misfortune of speaking to a landlord last Tuesday who said that, as far as he was concerned, a person who is living in his place is still using electricity, internet, telephone, water, and they have to pay for these things. And it's as simple as that. And some people use the rent money to sustain themselves and are not in a position to offer the ease. I thought he was being unreasonable. And I think that it's unfortunate in this crisis we are having people taking unreasonable positions. If you are a landlord, even if you're a landlord carrying a large mortgage, the reality of the situation is that you are still in a better situation than someone to whom you're renting. And I am not speaking from a position of privilege, as I always tell people on this program. I live in Barbados, I live in the real world. Contrary to popular belief, I'm not well off. And I understand the struggle of paying bills. I understand the struggle of losing a job. I understand the struggle of getting by from month to month. And I think that, especially when you're faced with a situation like this, we all have to be willing to give an ease, to give a break, to cut and contrive, and to say to somebody, look, I understand the burden that you're carrying, because there's plenty burden to pass around. Plenty, plenty burden. And I am not convinced that a number of people understand. You may have noticed over the last few weeks that I've become increasingly intolerant of people who are using this as an opportunity to make political statements, score political points. I had a lady this week, who called in, and she talked about the distance of the beds in the hospital, and I said she was being silly. I'm not apologizing for that attitude, because a part of the reason that I'm taking that attitude now is because I'm extremely concerned. I'm concerned that outlets like this on Brass Tacks have to be used for people to speak to issues, to ventilate problems, to ventilate concerns. And we have a special role to play in a crisis like this. So if this is the way that persons perceive my reactions to people like, I'm not willing to apologize. If I'm wrong, so be it. But it is nothing for which I am prepared to apologize, because I think that we have no time for foolishness now. We are in a completely different era. We are facing a challenge globally that we have not seen. I was born after the Second World War. And my understanding is that these are times like the First World War in 1918, the Spanish flu, and the Second World War. We are at war. And in war, situations will change. You might not be able to eat all of the things that you would normally have eaten, but you got to learn to deal with something different. Our lifestyle will have to change. We can't expect life to continue as normal. And we got to help out each other. We got to help our brothers and sisters. And we have to understand that there is a time to put the politics aside. There's a time to put the pettiness aside. There's a time to put the selfishness aside. And that time is now, in my opinion. So that's my position. And I will continue to hold this line. who vexed loss. And that is the reality of what we're facing. We come right back with Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I understand that my good friend Christian Hines, Barbadian by birth and by choice, living in Brussels, is listening this morning. I want to say good morning, Chris. It's good to have you on. Like most other people in Brussels, you are under lockdown, which has become a popular phrase these days. I'm trying to make the most of it. So I'm happy that one of the things that you're able to do when you're under lockdown is listen to good old Down to Brass Tacks. So Chris, good morning. And I hope that all is well with you guys up there. Europe is facing a far worse crisis than we are in terms of their ability or inability to move around. And I appreciate the challenge that many of you who are in Europe and who are Barbadians living in the UK and Europe and so on that are listening must be experiencing at this time. All I can say is that my thoughts are with you, and we hope that things will begin to look up soon. I don't know how much more of this we can take. Peter, I'm with you 100% on this issue. I think that the Prime Minister will need to look at the issue again and speak overall about the economic and social impact of the situation. Our business community cannot be this harsh about the situation and what it is doing to society. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Fine.
Greetings.
Now, there are two issues I would like to raise.
Sure.
Last week in the estimates debate, at the conclusion or some part in there, Bishop Azadi raised the question about the subvention to his party. Mm-hmm. Can you shed any light on this, sir?
No, but I know he raised it. But he's raised it before that he feels he should.
The normies want to have a party, and in parliament he should receive the subvention.
So you feel he should get it?
He has a party.
I know, but on principle, do you think he should get it?
Yes.
Did his party contest the election?
No.
Right. So how does he become a member, a person with a party in parliament? On what basis?
Across the floor.
Right. So one could argue that his formation of a political party was opportunistic. Would you not say?
So that's coincidental. Then should go to the DLP?
Certainly, if I were to speak from a principal position, I think the Democratic Labour Party should be the party receiving the subvention, because it was a party that went into the election, that gained the second most votes, percentage-wise, and as a result, they are, to me, far more legitimate in terms of an opposition voice than this was, PDP.
So what's happening to this subvention?
The Barbadians Labour Party get all. Get all the seats, all the money. No, there's a technicality which the Prime Minister explained regarding the disbursement of those funds. The disbursement of those funds is done under the Administration of Parliament Act. And my understanding is that the rules are relatively flexible and can be set from time to time. The rules regarding disbursement required that, I think, two or more persons within the party would previously have served in a cabinet. And therein lies the problem. No, I don't know whether those rules were always in place, because the last time we had a situation like this, you had David Thompson and Dennis Kelman. David would have served in the cabinet previously, but Kelman would not have. And I'm not sure how it worked then, but they received a subvention in 1999. So I suspect the rules may have been changed. And I think it is fortuitous, quite frankly, because I think it would be unfortunate if you could opportunistically form a political party and receive a subvention of $250,000? You would like him to get the money?
Well, if he isn't getting it, I think it should go to the DLP.
Well, I mean, maybe we can discuss. The problem is that once it is under the administration of Parliament, with the DLP not being represented, it's hard to give them money. But I certainly would be open to a conversation about the reform of financing of political parties that would allow a party that gained no seats to receive a little bit of money. I mean, in fairness, the Prime Minister did try, because she tried to facilitate their presence in the Senate through changing the Constitution to allow for someone to sit in the Senate. And certainly if that happened, one could argue that they would have parliamentary presence of some sort because they would have been in one of the houses of parliament. The challenge is that the goodly leader of the opposition put pay to that idea of allowing them to sit in the Senate. So as a result, he's in the lower house and the DLP is deprived. So we would need to become creative to find a way, a means of giving the DLP the opportunity to benefit from that money.
So what if some of the independent senators are members of the DLP?
But then they won't be independent senators, would they?
I mean, they're independent, but they're members of the DLP. They're not sitting in parliament as members of the DLP. They're sitting as independent senators.
They're sitting as independent senators.
But they might be members of the DLP.
Like who so? To the best of my knowledge, none of them are.
His daughter, I don't know, she's a member of the DLP.
I don't think she's a member of the DLP.
I don't know.
I think that we presume that they're Dems. But I don't know that we can say that they're members of the Democratic Labour Party. And certainly if they were, they would not be there because they're there as independent members. They may have a DLP inclination, you know.
All right. Next thing I want to look at is, I do feel,
sir, that if you're saying let's talk principle, I am with you principally that I think that the DLP should be able to get some of that money because the DLP fielded candidates for all 30 constituencies. They failed to gain one acceptance. And then, as I said, when the opportunity was created through the Senate, and I guess we could have bent the rules to allow them to benefit because they had a parliamentary presence in one of the houses. Unfortunately, that was also not possible because the gentleman crossed the floor and took up the seat. So I do feel that we need to have a conversation about how best to help the DLP out of their current situation and see if we could get some of that money to them. In all of this, the DLP doesn't seem to be interested in helping itself because I have not heard the DLP say one word about this whole situation or the fact that their legitimate right in terms of assuming a Senate seat has been taken away by the PDP. I haven't heard one single word about it. They have a lot to say about the Barbarous Labour Party, but they've said nothing about Adderley and his project.
All right, next thing I would like to look at is these figures for the coronavirus deaths. Mm-hmm. Now, if an individual dies suddenly, the police put out a statement, no foul play suspected, and an autopsy is held, and the cause of death is pronounced. Not so?
Yes.
Now, if you have an underlying illness, mm-hmm. and you contract the virus and die. No autopsy is performed, but people assume that you died from the virus, which could be incorrect. You could have died from the underlying illness.
I don't know the legal, I don't know the medical situation in which they do an autopsy. My understanding is that if you are in medical care and you die, in many instances, there's no need for an autopsy.
Right, the doctor could write the death certificate and so on.
So you're saying that you would like autopsies
I'm saying
to
that
be...
There might be people dying mm-hmm. who have contracted the coronavirus, mm-hmm. and they might have been dying, they might die from some underlying illness, not the virus itself. But their death will be listed as a coronavirus
death?
Yeah. But nobody's performing any autopsy.
But what is the concern that you have about it, though?
But I'm saying that the figures might not be accurate. Mm-hmm. There might be people dying for all types of reasons who might have contracted the virus, but their death is listed as a coronavirus death.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm only looking at the accuracy.
So you feel the numbers might be, but we don't really have any deaths anyhow, so and let's hope that we don't.
I'm not talking about
overseas. I must tell you, though, sir, that if you are aware of what's going on in Italy now, I think autopsies are the farthest thing from their mind, quite frankly, because all medical personnel, even doctors that are junior doctors,
I know,
have been pulled on board to deal with all of this. And I think that the pathologists and different people are probably working in accident and emergency and trying to deal however they can with people. So I don't really know that questions of autopsy and the accuracy of the death count and whether the people die from pneumonia caused by COVID or whether it was pneumonia caused by you know, some other circumstance, stand up in the cold too long. I really don't know if that's a priority for them.
Okay then.
All right,
thanks, Peter.
All right, sir. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. Good chatting with you. Dr. Brastatz, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Good.
Let me say, the light of light looks always on the motive, not the deed. Let me first congratulate the Prime Minister and her team for their professional approach pertaining to the coronavirus and all the bulletins to date through the electronic and print media. Very commendable. Sir, may I have my conversation with you this morning by saying, come September the 2nd, 2020, would be 28 years ago, the same defense lawyer argued and was successful in getting the cat o' nine tail outlawed, being found to be inhuman and degrading. That same defense lawyer has now found herself in a brilliant position to find the most appropriate replacement for the cat due to the fact that most barbarians and law-abiding citizens would like to see the cat out of the death penalty. As a layman that is not legally literate, I still think a recent ruling from the CCJ, and we do not amend our laws on capital punishment, there are still loopholes as certain enactments still empower the court to order corporal punishment. Yet, at the same time, it's believed a section of that same act prohibits orders from being carried out. We have to put solutions once and for all to this indiscriminate killing by the gang. We must not fall short of reality. The police, though short of manpower, should be commended for their professionalism, as all and sundry are fully aware that our royal and loyal police officers are not dealing with Sunday school children when dealing with hardened criminals. I personally compliment them for their apprehension of suspects without the assistance of the Mounted Police of Canada, Scotland Yard of England, or the FBI from the USA. We must now think like an independent country by revisiting certain treaties. What worked in one jurisdiction, sir, is certainly wouldn't work in another. Without doubt, I am all for capital punishment, which should be used as a deterrent and not a punishment. This country should always be a safe place to live, where one should be able to go from place without fear. We cannot let one or two individuals or dropouts to cause people to be afraid to leave their own homes. It should not be forgotten the recent incident in which a regular Canadian was shot, leaving him paralyzed. The alleged dumping of a postman in the Hanford well and a check with last Sunday's son, two murders in 24 hours. If you don't want to use the gallows, and there are to be new guidelines on capital punishment, the humble Mayor Amor Motley's administration has more than 2/3 majority where the Constitution could be amended with the introduction for lethal injection or gas chambers. I listen to your response.
You said gas,
sir.
Chambers? You said gas chambers, sir?
Yes, sir. I would like, if you're not going to use the gallows, you can have lethal injections or the introduction of a gas chamber.
You would like people to be executed by way of gas chambers?
You don't agree with that?
I don't agree with anything that you said, but I sat quietly and listened with interest as you spoke, and as you said several things with which I strongly object. But when you speak of gas chambers, I think you cross the line, sir.
Well,
maybe we should go to Auschwitz and procure the plans that they had for their gas chambers so that we could, or maybe we should just ask them if we could borrow theirs.
Okay, since you've commented then, sir, only on the gas chamber. I know your position on capital punishment, and I respect you for your position. But, sir, I know you are very worried, and you're a man, a gentleman, that have traveled internationally. But I recall in 1967, sir, while I visited Singapore, I realized a store was left open. And as a stranger, I went in, not saying no one. I went in and looked all along. Then I came back out. I asked someone, why the store is open and no one? I said, well, people in Singapore are very honest. They don't steal. And if anyone had to enter the store, we have all short-circuit cameras, sir. The same hand that they took up an item with would be cut off in public. I thought it was only a figure of speech. Mm. In less than 5 minutes while talking to that gentleman, a fellow came out the store looking like an Indian. And
so he looked like an Indian?
I identified a hand being cut off on the spot. Is that not inhuman? That is worse to me than Nightingale.
You said that he looked like an Indian?
This happened in Singapore in 1965,
okay.
Sir.
No, I was the music, but you say he looked like an Indian.
Pardon?
You say he looked like an Indian.
Yeah, his
what Indian is look like?
Look, I thought he was an Indian to me.
Oh, okay.
With a very pretty straight hair.
You know, sir, there are places in the world, I don't know if you saw these videos going around, where the police in India have taken to whipping people who have broken the coronavirus regulations. So there are several videos in which you see people walking the streets and riding motorcycles, and the police dropping some warm lashes in the backsides. For breaking the rules of the corona lockdown. I'm laughing, sir, but I honestly think that corporate punishment is not a laughing matter. And while I appreciate that there are several countries in the world that use that as a form of punishment, the Islamic Republic of Iran, my understanding is that they also cane people. They cane women in Afghanistan for being inappropriately attired up in public. So if they go in public showing too much flesh, they're beaten by men. I know there are societies where stoning for adultery is something that is still practiced. But I don't believe that we necessarily need to take instructions from any of these countries. And I'm sorry, sir, I disagree with you fundamentally. That we need to have an alternative to corporal punishment. There's no need for an alternative to corporal punishment. You don't need an alternative to beating somebody with a cat and nine tails. And I don't believe that it's a priority of the Prime Minister to find an alternative for beating anybody with a cat and nine tails because she was part of that rule. The absence of the cat and nine tails has nothing to do with the current crime situation that we have. The absence of the death penalty has nothing to do with the current crime situation that we have. Because persons like yourself suffer under this insane delusion that if you start hanging people tomorrow, crime will stop. And so there is absolutely no evidence, any time in history, for the fact that this happens. And I say, I can show you a state in the United States of America that hangs more people than anywhere else. And they still have more crime than anywhere else. What then is your point?
Sir. You recall only, I think it was last week, that for 3 or 4 people in India committing where I'm dying murder that they were high?
Where?
In India last week.
I know, but what's the problem with that? They hang people, we don't.
But what I'm trying to say is that...
And India still has crime.
Punishment is being used as a deterrent, sir.
But it's not a deterrent because people are still committing crimes. So, I can go on the internet now and find out how many people have been killed in India over the past few days. The fact that they are hanging people does not make a difference because people are still being killed. So then clearly if you are suggesting it's a deterrent, then it's not working. And what I would suggest to you, as I've always said to other people, if you think that hanging is such an effective deterrent to crime, then why don't we hang people for everything, every infringement? And let's start with infidelity. Let's make the crime of infidelity a crime that is punishable by hanging. And we will hang all of the adulterers swiftly. No, but don't laugh. Don't laugh. If it is a deterrent, if it is a deterrent, and we believe that it is something that needs to be deterred, because clearly infidelity is something that needs to be deterred, let's hang adulterers. How do you feel about that?
Look.
Or you want to just whip them publicly?
No. In other words,
as it's done in Afghanistan.
It's a loaded question.
No, but it's not funny.
I have not given it a thought.
But, sir, give it some thought. Because you have some challenges in terms of that argument. If it is that it is a deterrent, it is not working as a deterrent in anywhere else that it is used. Because I've just given you the example of Texas, where they hang people left, right, and center, and people still commit crimes. India, you said, they hang people and they still commit crimes. So if it is that it is a deterrent, that's not working. The other argument that I would raise is that if it is such an effective deterrent to crime, then let's use hanging to punish. Let's use hanging to punish every single crime that we want to stop. So housebreaking, adultery. Let's hang people for all of those things.
Okay, sir. You prove, without doubt, to be a master.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate the commendation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about this next week, though. So you think about it and you get some ammunition and you come back. Let's talk about it next week. But be very careful with this gas chamber argument. Huh? Gas chambers are, for me, like whipping. Because gas chambers speak to an era of human development that I think is something we ought to be ashamed of. And the fact that we use gas chambers to execute people, to me, it will always sit uncomfortably with us as a human civilization that gas chambers were used in that way. And that's the reason why we don't even like the idea of using gas chambers to execute dogs now, because it is an uncomfortable perception. And flogging, for me, is the same thing. I have always associated beating with slavery, and I have always been uncomfortable with the idea of the state sanctioning the use of something like the cat and nine tails that was developed to discipline errant slaves. So my challenge with these issues really is that it speaks to an aspect of human development that makes me very uncomfortable, and an aspect that we need to move away from as quickly as possible. All right, sir, I want to thank you for your contribution, and hopefully we can chat next week when you get some more ammunition. We have to take a break and come right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 4341790. Good morning, Peter. If you hang me for a crime, you should be hanged for the same reason you hang me for, because you also committed the same crime. That's an interesting point. Eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So certainly if you are committing a crime by hanging, the act of hanging is also committing a crime, the crime of murder. And I couldn't agree with you more. Someone tells me that Texas is different because it does their executions by lethal injection. And I think, sir, if you argue that position, you're missing the point. The lethal injection in Texas is a form of execution. I am opposed to execution, period, whether it be by hanging or otherwise. I do think, though, that hanging is particularly egregious for me because it is ultimately it's lynching, which is something that was also associated with an aspect of human history that I think that we need to forget as quickly as we possibly can, or move away from, I should say. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing relatively well. I called to deal with two issues.
Sure.
One of them is that the National Insurance sent out a circular, a letter, whatever. They want to go over the direct deposit for pensioners, either the bank or the credit union. Now, most of the pensioners are basically old people, not very young people who but are not.
You said most of the pensioners? The fact that you're a pensioner generally means you're old.
But fair enough.
You don't get a pension when you're young.
But right. So I want to get over that. These people have.
You didn't talk to me about this on Tuesday.
But I ain't calling by the program for so long.
Oh, okay.
This
okay.
Vegan,
no problem.
Yeah. Mr. Pine.
All right.
I ain't
no, because I spoke to a guy on Tuesday about the same thing. Anyhow, you carry on. I don't know, you listen on Tuesday? Because a guy calling about the same thing, saying that, well, people don't really like the direct debit and it's not fair.
No, but the point is this. It has a deadline. And I am asking that they postpone the deadline, which is the 13th of April, 2020. because some people get checks, and people in the private sector charge them for them. Everybody don't go to the bank or the credit union. So people go to people in the private sector, and the private sector people charge them sometimes before the day.
I know, Tony.
So you know that.
I know that, yeah. Well, you're telling me nothing that I don't know already.
Well, all right. I ensure you know. Anyhow,
you remember the days when I had gold bond stamps?
Yes, I remember.
Right. You used to get gold bond stamps and you used to stick them on a card and you get a discount.
It's an American thing.
And what happened to the gold bond program?
Man, I ain't know of anything that.
It went out, and then we had something called the Massey point system that was taken over.
But right? I think you are saying that if that's direct, saying to the bank, you get with the program.
You better believe it. Get with the program.
But that's what you are saying.
Yeah.
You don't have to empathize with people who got
there. No. How you mean by all, Tony?
But you maybe, but I'm talking about having empathy.
I have empathy. I owe, and I have all people that I take care of.
You don't. But well, all right, Mr.
Tony, I had people in my family who fought with me tooth and nail on this issue of direct debit. And I will say the same thing to you that I said to them. You cannot stop the world from turning.
But you're not saying to stop it. I just say postpone the
but
deadline.
For what?
If you postpone it to the 13th, the 13th of April
will come and you will still have to deal with it.
But listen, Tony, there comes a time
that we have to say.
But there comes a time, Mr. Wickham, when you postpone things.
Yeah, there also comes a time when you implement things. And to be perfectly honest, I think that this is a good time for them to understand that going in a bank and standing up is the last thing you should be doing now. If you can use this COVID issue to get people out of a bank lane or onto a direct debit system, be helping. But I am not stopping you from expressing the view.
Listen, the last time I spoke to you was about the water. Mm-hmm. Since then, people came here, the pipe is run right in front of my house.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't find out that because you didn't want me to talk about it. So I understand.
Tony, come off it, man.
Let me deal with Tony. Listen, Tony, I do not have a problem.
Hold on a second. I do not have a problem with you expressing a view on the issue. All I'm saying is that you're not going to get me to say, I agree with you, because I don't.
But I don't want you to say, I ain't that kind of person.
So your view is that we should delay the implementation of this direct debit thing. You do not think that with COVID in the air, that the idea of a pensioner going out to cash a check is probably a bad idea?
You don't know that. You got to go in any case.
But if you go out less frequently, if I am saying to you that I am going to discourage lines at a post office, for example, and that's where a lot of them cash these checks, I am prepared to discourage that. Don't you think that that's helping a little bit?
I thought them go to the credit unions.
Right, they want to line up there neither.
They go to the BNB.
We don't want you lining up nowhere. We want you to get your money in your account.
The credit union, and I see the line guy long down Broad Street.
Yeah, but don't you think the idea of a direct debit that would avoid that is a good idea?
But you want proper argument for direct debit.
Because
you're the moderator. But I ain't supporting that at this time. So people, I got to go. Look, I spend most of my time at the house. But I got to go. Why coming around to the next thing with this COVID-19? The poor people cannot go to the supermarket and buy up 2 months in groceries like you. They got to buy what the money could bring.
Oh, you know why buy.
So, but you know about people. I can't know about you, too. Yeah? And the point is, you got to go out, you buy a week in groceries, you got to go back again.
Yeah.
Right now, I forget to buy ketchup, and I was in town Tuesday, and I still ain't remember to buy the ketchup.
But left out the ketchup.
Get out of the ass.
Left out the ketchup. You don't need ketchup.
You can't tell me where the left out.
You don't have acid reflux.
I ain't got none. I'm a cook, man. You can't tell me.
Tony, you don't have acid reflux issues at your age?
But I don't know about you and the acid reflux. I go to the doctor every six months.
I just saying that ketchup is probably something you could leave out the diet. Because you don't need ketchup.
You know what I like about you?
What?
I would like you to do all this fight that you put up for all these things. Put up a fight for your grandfather and get the Englishman name off of the bridge.
We can talk about that another time. We talking about food consumption. All I'm saying is that the corona might help you get off the ketchup. Because you don't need the ketchup.
But ketchup
ain't good for you, especially not a person in your age.
I hear you, Dan. So you don't need to tell me so no more. The point is this. The poor people cannot buy up 2 months in groceries because they don't have the means to do it. Some supermarkets have been making things a little better for the old people and the poor people. Like the bank and Massey supermarkets, where there's a time that you go. But you still need to got the money. You can't buy a month in groceries, but then you only got money to buy 1 week. So it means that you have to go about 4 times a month. And all I am asking people is to consider these things. Just consider. Don't look at their situation. Your situation, you with a car, you could go and buy 6 months in groceries and carry them and put them in your battery at your house. Poor people got a lot of
a battery? What is that? Is it a battery?
A battery is a big room.
Is a ladder?
A big room. No, it's a big room where you store your good thing.
Are you called a battery?
It's called a battery. That's,
I never
my mother
heard
used
that
to
one
be
before.
A domestic servant.
Okay.
And the white people, it's called the white people, used to work for white people.
Mm.
We got the big battery. You can see inside, but you can't go in. The people, the mistress, before she left for work, she would pick up ways to cook and lock it back. It used to be. But we always had a larder, and some of you know got covers.
Okay.
So all I would like people to understand is that whatever happens, we can go. We ain't going to go as regular, but we got to go out to get things. And bear with us when we go to get a few things or help us to get the few things. That is all I'm saying.
Tony, somebody online is saying that you might want to know that when you do a direct credit to a credit union, you don't pay any fees, and secondly, you get all of the money one time as opposed to the check, which means that you need to go more frequently. So this is a guy who is 71 and he's saying that he has switched to the credit union and he finds it more effective because he can go out and get his money one time.
I don't want it. If you say postpone something, you're against it.
Alright. Okay. I'm just reading one of the comments. Let me say to you, Tony, that I do not disagree with you about people needing to go out. I understand that we are seeing a lot of old people start home. But I also appreciate that people need to go out. And whether they go to the village shop or whatever, they will need to go and buy things from time to time. A big part of our diet should be fresh vegetables and provisions. And fresh vegetables, by their very nature, will be fresh and will be needed frequently. So at least once a week, you're going to need to go out, right? So I don't have a problem with that. And I do think that the point you made about supermarkets facilitating the older people is important. I had the fortune of shopping yesterday at the supermarket in Warren's. And I think I stood in line for about 20 minutes. It wasn't much longer than that. But I really have to commend them. I thought the whole process was orderly. The security guard was calling people 5 at a time. You know, a guy came with a kid, a little baby in arms, which was a fantastic thing to see to start with. And he was given priority. And everybody else in the line said, yeah, you go through. You got, you know, a little girl to take care of. And that type of thing is the thing that I think we would want to see. If I saw an elderly person in line, I would feel that that person should go ahead and be able to accomplish your shopping. What I did not like, sir, I'm going to tell you this, is that while I was in the supermarket, I still saw a lot of people socializing, you know, and I had to say to one lady, this is not the day for us to have conversations about issues. We need to get in the supermarket and get out because a lot of people on the outside waiting. So I think that's something that we can probably do where people become a bit more businesslike in these times. You could socialize on your telephone or on the internet or whatever, but I don't think that we should be socializing in any supermarket, starting at chatting and you know, comparing.
I am aware of that, but you know the old habits die hard.
But they got die sometimes.
So then I greeted people Tuesday and with this elbow business.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I wanted to do is go for a shake hand.
Yeah. I must tell you that when I go to the supermarket, I'm a hugger. I like to hug people. So there are certain people that work in the Massey supermarket, and they know who they are. I have not gotten a hug for the year because it's the first time I saw the lady yesterday, and I had to say hello at a distance. And it's sad because it's not something that we do as a population. You know, we tend not to be doing it. I live in France part of the year, as you know, and when a French person greets you, male or female, they kiss you three times. Not once, not twice, but three times. All of that, stop.
The Palestinians do it, though.
They're going to do three kisses, the Arabs.
Right. But the point is that you still got to consider those people who some of these measures is going to affect adversely. You got to consider them. And since you have a car, you don't have one, what you could do is pass around the point, and you could pick me up so I could collect things from the supermarket, or you could collect the list from me.
I don't have a problem with doing that.
Purchase the things for me.
I don't have a problem doing that.
I am.
But you think that I went to the supermarket for myself yesterday?
No, but I'm telling you.
It was somebody that I went to the supermarket for. And I don't have a problem as a person who is fortunate enough to be younger and mobile. I don't have a difficulty doing something like that.
That you could pass around by me and assist me in that there.
Since I invited you to come by me for this, for brandy. Because
brandy,
you ain't drinking a brandy no more.
I ain't an alcohol person. Okay. I used to be a barman and I used to drink lemonade.
Yeah.
I used to use younger strawberries and syrup.
Okay.
But I think in
seriousness, in all seriousness, the brandy will come later, but I do feel that certainly at the village level or the community level, we can designate people who are, as you said, who have a car and who have some time on their hand and young and things to go in the supermarket and do shopping. I personally would have no problem doing it, and I think there are others like me who wouldn't have a difficulty doing it, because as I said, that's what I did yesterday.
Tony, there are
people on the line though that are saying that you got the word wrong and that it is a pantry. And a pantry can be large or small.
But I tell you what people are reading and telling me. I know what pantry is and I know what battery is. Ask the older people about the battery and the houses, and the big houses, the plantation houses and all. I don't deal with malapropism. I know about pantries. I did hotel work and so on. I was a butler for a millionaire in Sandy Lane. But it is called a battery, and the one with the plantation houses.
Yeah.
And you can see inside of it, but it got a lock. And then the mistress is leaving. She take out one of the coats.
And lock back.
And lock it back.
Yeah.
That's what I know about. But so don't mind them modern day people about pantry.
But it's three people who say that ain't a battery is a pantry, and that
they
is...
don't know about the battery.
Okay,
don't know about the battery. Ask it. Look, I got a friend, Mr. Robinson, up at the best man party roundabout guy in St. George. He lived on a plantation. He would know about the battery. He could call and tell you what a battery is. I could tell him, send it by email to you. Them houses still got them batteries.
Mm-hmm.
But a pantry is a different thing. The hotels have got the pantry and all sort of thing.
Somebody is saying that the battery, it is called a battery, B-U-T-T-E-R-Y, and it is a large room in a monastery where food and drink is stored.
So they're saying
that the battery is where... The food and drink, in a monastery. It's not associated with a regular house.
I come up hearing it being called a battery. For years, my mother used to be a domestic servant.
All right, no problem.
And I did work also at plantation houses. I kept one in St. George. Mm-hmm. So that's where it is.
But I purchased a house, I lived in a house where there was a large, and I didn't know that a pantry could be that big, because I know about pantries. There was one in my grandmother's house in the Government Hill where the pantry was, it was like a larder, basically. I thought that was a pantry.
He introduced me to this idea of a pantry that you could actually walk in
that had a light, that has shelves and you could put things on or whatnot.
You've got door and everything. So that was a
battery, I guess.
I was around long, but they got a different name, but we called it a battery. They got older people that still living that did domestic work,
mm-hmm.
that they would tell it was called a battery.
All right.
But,
Anyway, we're going to have to run. Tony, it's good to chat with you. We haven't spoken in a while. I hope you're keeping well. Are you?
No, that I am still very much alive.
Good. No, I asked if you're keeping well, not if you're alive.
Huh?
If you're keeping well.
Yeah, I am all right. I am all right. You don't even walk with a stick.
You don't even walk with a stick?
No, I don't walk with a stick. All right, that's good.
All you do is you lay off the ketchup or ease up off of the ketchup and you will be even better.
I would like somebody to buy a package for me now because mine... Too low.
Alrighty, take care. Chat. We talk later. This is Dr. Brassas. We take a message and come right back.